You're listening to another tasty dish from the larder. Recipes for fresh thinking, cooking up new ways of being.
So hi everybody, my name's Laura Northey and I'm one of the tour guides on Recipes for Fresh Thinking, and I'm really appreciative that you're here listening to us, and I'm really, really grateful that Tom Evans is here willing to be interviewed. So welcome, Tom.
Hi, Lauren.
I'm not sure how many of you yet have downloaded Bend in Time, but I've been one of the lucky people to see it at its onset. And Tom, you'll be pleased to know that I've done all the modules on the Bend in Time, and I found it really, really beneficial. But before I start talking about me, I just want to ask you, why is Bend in Time different from the other management systems you can get out there at the moment?
Well, most time management systems, and there's some really good ones out there, they focus on helping you prioritise. So, you know, they might be task-based and they take you through setting up your tasks and doing the ones that are most important first. And they'll also talk about managing your interruptions. You know, they said that every time you switch from one task to another task, you waste about 5 minutes getting back into the groove again. But Bend in Time takes a fundamentally different view of time management, and it really helps us explore the relationship between our consciousness and the perceived passage of time.
Yeah, so if I get this right, so if you're sitting at your desk and all of a sudden an email plops up and you start beavering away and distracting yourself, and then the next thing you know, half an hour's gone by, leaving you what you think of short of time now to do your task at work, and you're going to be in trouble, This is going to help you out.
Well, no, that's what I'm saying. Conventional time management systems help out with that sort of thing. What Bending Time does is something which is a bit more subtle. So, for example, even if you're focused on a task, so you've got your priorities sorted out and you're working on the project. Let's say you're writing a book or you're working on a blog or you're working on a sales proposal. If you get dragged out of the now, even if there's no interruptions, no phones ringing, you switch your emails off, you're not on Twitter, you're not on Facebook. If you start thinking about what you're having for supper, or you start thinking about that argument you had the day before, or what your boss is going to think about this, or what the client's going to think about it, it drags you away from the task that you've got on hand. So what we do in Bending Time is the first thing we do is we deal with the blocks and the fears that have been holding you back in the past. And next we set goals so you don't have to worry about the future, which allow you to focus on the now. That's what we do in Module 1 of Bending Time. Module 2, what we do is explore our relationship between consciousness and time. So what it does is take you into a state. You know when you've been in the zone and time seems to take on that sort of magical quality?
Yeah, that's right, yeah. You have all the time in the world for then.
Yeah, it takes you into that state. Now, most of the time is easy to get into that state if you go into what's called meditation. But for many people, they find meditation quite difficult because it means sort of switching your mind off. So what this does is get you into that state with your eyes open so you can be fully focused on a task or in a room or in a meeting, but also in this quasi-meditative state, so time takes on this amazing quality. And I experienced that I was at a meeting today, funnily enough, and we were talking about Bending Time. It was in a group workshop. And the lady who was running the workshop came up to me and said, what did you do to the room? Because we seem to have more time. We didn't run out of time. And what happens is, even when you're in a group situation, if everybody is in this state, which is why we're also doing Bending Time workshops, by the way, if everyone's in this state, the whole day takes on a great quality. It's not just subjective, it's almost like group subjective as well, which is quite uncanny.
And I'd like to say, Tom, that, you know, I thought I was a learner at meditation, and in the past I found it quite difficult to kind of, I guess, feel that I've, you know, concentrated my mind or clearing my mind or whatever it is that I thought I should be doing. But this open eye process seemed to really, well, I don't know, it just gave me a lot of clarity, and it was like time slowed down for me. I just seemed to be able to managed to do everything that I wanted to do, to be honest.
I know, isn't it incredible? It's like, you know, when you drive home, or you're driving somewhere, and you might be a little bit late for the meeting, you think, there's no way I'm going to get there for 6 o'clock. But somehow you seem to get there at 6 o'clock on the dot.
Well, that kind of what happened to me, there was kind of a lot of serendipity that seemed to happen. It was kind of like that as a metaphor, you know, all the green lights coming on, and then you manage to get where you want to go on time. But the great thing was, I was really calm about the whole thing as well. So it was just like I knew it was going to happen, even though consciously I didn't know it was going to happen.
Yeah, and if you get a project, you know, for example, I mentioned about writing a book, because that's a lot of the stuff that I do with clients. What happens is, let's say we've got a book, we start in January, we want to publish our book by the 1st of September or something like that. What happens is that we seem to write the book fairly easily. Then from nowhere, you meet this wonderful person who's a fantastic editor. And then from somewhere else, a designer turns up. And then the publishing route turns up. And somehow the 1st of September just happens without any effort. But if you get concerned about a fear of being late, or you get concerned about maybe worrying about what people will think about the book, these fears kind of kick in and they sort of make time not work. So it's really important, which is the first module, it's really important that we deal with the blocks and the fundamental fears that stop us going forward.
Exactly. And I think for me, my experience was that module one was really beneficial to me, because it really somehow cleaned all the blocks out, whereas I could just trust, even though I didn't really know what I was trusting.
Exactly, yeah, exactly. And that's what the goal-setting system in Module 1 is all about as well, because it sets goals not based on targets, but on what we want to learn. And it's almost like we've got unseen hands helping us learn and evolve, which is just kind of quite magical, really.
Exactly, and like I say, you know, I'm a bit of a layman and all of this stuff, so it is for everybody, isn't it, Tom? You don't have to be, you know, particularly spiritual, particularly good at maths, or particularly creative. It is for any human being, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Well, I'm an electronic engineer. I'm sort of looking at this from a very practical point of view. You know, I shun away from some of the more woo-woo, la-la type of practices. And to me, it's all that's happened here is I've discovered some so-called spiritual practices. And I found out how you can use them for real-world purposes. But one of the issues with so-called spiritual practices is they're not actually that spiritual. They're all part of us, you know, because we meditate naturally. When you do that drive somewhere, you can't remember getting to the other end. You were in the meditative state. And meditation is not about sitting in a darkened cave with your legs crossed, you know, chanting Om.
Although lots of people would like to let us think that that's exactly what it is.
Exactly, yeah, yeah.
But it is for the normal man.
Yeah, but this is where kind of the science kicks in. When we get to module three in the program, then what I've done then is I've researched a lot about current neurological science and how the left and right brain interact. And, you know, it turns out that the left brain isn't this logical reasoning centre, and the right brain isn't this creative centre. There's much more subtle things going on, but it does look like the left brain creates our illusion of time and our right brain sits everywhere and everywhere else. So if you end up just being right-brained, you end up being a bit of a dreamer and your head in the clouds and never get anything done. And if you're very left-brained, then you're really into all the detail, and also nothing gets done because all you're just concerned about the detail. And module three is all about getting the left and right brains working together on the same task. And that's kind of whole brain thinking, if you know what I mean. Right?
Yeah, which hopefully many people have listened to and learnt of before with you, Tom. So tell me, what's the definition then? What's the distinction with the symmetrical thinking?
Well, symmetrical thinking is where you get the left and right brain working together. And there's a structure that joins the two hemispheres together called the corpus callosum. And it used to be thought that this structure was the what allowed the left and right brain to communicate. But what it actually does is it switches one hemisphere off so the other can get on with a task. And in our left brain society, in our left brain education system and culture, it's tended to switch the right brain off such that the left brain just works all the time. And you can actually work perfectly well and function with half a brain. As my mother used to say to me, if you had a whole brain, you'd be quite dangerous. And and that was probably quite prophetic, because when I was about 40, somebody said to me, a psychic lady I met, who coincidentally I've just helped publish two books, she said, your left brain is about 110% on and your right brain is virtually off. And wow. She showed me some exercises to start switching the right brain on. And that's, if I think about it, that must be 10, 12 years ago. That's kind of what took me down this path without me knowing it. But what's happened now, current neuroscience has sort of corroborated this. They can anesthetize bits of a brain now, switch a whole left brain off and a whole right brain off, and ask somebody that's perfectly healthy and awake how they feel. And amazing advances in what we think our brain does now have resulted from it. And what I do in the simple exercises in module two is simulate left brain on, right brain off, right brain on, left brain off. And then in the very end exercise in module three, then it's left brain and right brain on the same task. So you can sense what it's like when you're in that whole brain mode.
Fabulous. Now, I know, you know, the workbook's a really, really good workbook work through. It's easy to read and easy to, you know, get on with. But what really cracked it for me was the visualizations.
Oh, yeah.
What's the importance for you of the visualizations? Why have you introduced those as well as the workbook?
Well, the workbook would only tell you about it, wouldn't it? So I could say it gives you the theory, right? And then you have to imagine it. So the visualizations actually take you there. And behind, you notice that this is that music in the background of all the visualizations.
Mm-hmm.
And that's called brain entrainment music. And what it does, it puts the same music into each ear. That's why it's best if you listen to them with headphones on. But the music's slightly out of phase. And what this does, before I start talking and doing the guidance in the visualizations, it slightly confuses, but in a nice way, your left and right brain. So they go quiescent, so then the suggestions in the meditation, the hypnotic suggestions, kind of go in and do their job. So brain entrainment music, great stuff just to relax. In fact, as part of the 3.5 hours of visualizations, there is just a half hour track without me speaking, which just gets you chilled out. So actually, one of the things about this program, I think about it, when I created it, I wasn't thinking this, but it made me realise afterwards it's actually also one of the most relaxing things you can ever do.
Yeah, that's right. And the brain entrainment, that's on module two, isn't it, with the subjective
that's
time.
That's right, yeah.
And that really does kind of anchor in, if you like, the perceptions that we have of time and how it differentiates really on what you're doing and exactly how you're feeling at the time.
Yeah.
You know, when you're in the zone, it's just so easy and it all happens. And then if you are, like you say, projecting about the future or worrying about the past, then all of a sudden the time has a completely different meaning to us.
It does, yeah. And actually, if you think about it, the whole idea behind the visualizations is that you kind of run through them and then jump out into your real world. But there's no reason why you couldn't play that brain entrainment track in the background with headphones on while you were actually working on something.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Or maybe if you're just, you know, you're thinking about something and you're doing a bit of visualization yourself, then, you know, it's a real nice way to just relax and get in the zone, if you like.
For sure, yeah.
So talking about getting in the zone, there you have certain things that, you know, you sort of allow people to learn along the way to get in the zone. How did you come across that yourself?
Well, I've some of it is happenstance. So you know, I've read a lot. I've worked with a few people. I've worked with a few shamans, actually. In fact, most of module four are basically shamanic tricks. And shamans for aeons have done things like sending messages back in time. You can send healing back in time as well.
Wow.
And you can send messages back in time to yourself. And it's thought that light bulb moments are future memories from you or someone else leaking back from the future in time to the now. Now, it doesn't matter if this is imaginary or is real, but imagining that it might be seems to have great real-world results. So those the module four is where it gets if it does get a bit wacky at any point, then module four is where it does that. But what we do in module four is also introduce the idea that our inner minds, so we've got we've got our gut mind and our heart mind, actually run to different time clocks. And this also has been verified now by neuroscientists who've got full body MRI scanners and they've seen changes in neurology in the neurons in the gut and the neurons in the heart centre ahead of time of when the people have been consciously aware of something. And they haven't got any answer for this just now, but it seems that our gut is always about 5 seconds ahead of our minds, which is why it pays great dividends to trust your gut, because it's always right and it's ahead of where you are, which is kind of explains things like, it's called near-field precognition, this idea that the phone rings, but you kind of know who it was just 5 seconds before. And that's because our gut mind is a very sophisticated mind, evolution, in evolution terms, it developed way before our conscious mind. And one of the theories is that all our gut minds are actually wired together and they kind of communicate in some kind of way through the collective consciousness.
And that's amazing, isn't it? Because when you think back on time, you know, people for eons have said, you know, trust your gut, or, you know, what does your gut say? That, you know, people that have no awareness of this kind of stuff at all, or what, you know, and that's what it's been. Yeah, you know, go with your heart, but trust your gut.
Yeah, and if you go back further in time now, there's the Greeks had these two gods called Kairos and Kronos. And Kronos was the god that sat inside time, left brain. Right. And Kairos was the creative god that sat outside time. So way before MRI scanners, there was a concept that we had these two minds. And I read recently a great book by a guy called Ian McGilchrist called The Master and His Emissary that really explains cutting-edge research into what true left and right brain functions are. But interesting enough, I also got a couple of books by a guy called Emanuel Swedenborg, who lived in the late 1700s, early 1800s, Swedish mystic, but also a civil engineer. You know, so he's a scientist who also embraced the more mystical side of things. And he, just by doing anatomy on cadavers, he actually worked out a lot of the left and right brain functions back then that current neuroscientists are discovering just by looking at it and tuning into what you perceived that part of the brain was for. So incredible that a lot of this stuff is in our sort of racial memory and known, but it's just lovely that to me that where science is catching up with meta-science, if you know what I mean, and they're converging. And if you ask me really where I found all this stuff out, it's like I keep one foot in the sort of metaphysical camp and one foot in the scientific camp, and I kind of draw conclusions from the two. But then what I do as an engineer is I try it out. You know, as you know, I tested the vending time out well before we launched it to make sure it actually worked. And it's really the conclusion of about 3 or 4 years of research, where I've tested and tested and tested. First, when I was working with authors, to get authors in the zone. And then I realised the same principles to get authors in the zone can be used for anybody working on any activity.
Now, what do you think is the most beneficial benefit of doing this bending time? You know, being able to, bend time, basically.
Okay. I would say it's, let's say you've got a project to complete, and you think you haven't got enough time to do it. If you get in the zone before you complete that project, you'll find you seem to magically get more work done in less time. So my theory is I haven't tested this, I'd say, from a scientific perspective. It's more a subjective perspective, that you seem to get about 4 times the amount of work done that you would do normally in the same time. And something else magical seems to happen as well. Is when I'm working, when I'm writing, I do switch my emails off, do switch Twitter off and all this sort of stuff, but I do switch my mobile off, but I haven't got a phone divert on my landline.
Right.
And what happens is when I'm writing, the phone doesn't ring until I finish writing.
Wow.
So it's almost like you're sending a message out and say, I'm busy, don't interrupt me, and then as soon as you finish, then you get the interruption. So there's a lot of magical stuff going on as well. The only thing I'd suggest, because it's so magical, what I've done with the spending time program is this. We said, look, we've got an introductory price for it, which I think is reasonable. And I've also said there's a 30-day full money-back guarantee as well. So there's no risk to trying it.
That's right. It's a completely win-win. Yeah. And I mean, I found, I don't know if I'm just blowing my own trumpet here, but not only did I have seem to be able to get the work done in less time or have enough time for it, but because I'd done the modules, you know, my work was so much better.
Yes, yes.
You know, it flowed better, it read better. It just seemed a lot better than stuff that I'd produced before.
Yeah, and what I find as well is that, you know, when you're writing something and you might have to go through first draft, second draft, third draft, what happens is your first drafts take on the quality of your previous third drafts. You still got to do your editing for typos and things like that, but it just seems to flow better. And what I found as well when I first even got into this, I found that it was almost like certainly when you work on a book, it was like the book was getting read to you and you were acting as a sort of transcriber stroke dictator, if you know what I mean. But when I say dictator, I don't mean that sort of dictator like in that sense, someone that's dictating the book.
Yeah, no, I've got visions now of that film, but I can't think of the name of it. But you know who it is. So I think a really fundamental part for me as well was the messages in time, Tom. Do you just want to explain a bit about that?
Yeah, and what that's about is that we can actually send messages back to ourselves in the past. And once you learn that that's possible, then you've got to think about what you were doing at that time in the past. Now, even at that time in the past, when you got this message from this person in the future, and that sort of diverted your route, so you became this person in the future, isn't it possible that a future version of you now is sending you messages back in time right now? And if so, how would you know the difference between those messages in time you're receiving now and your inner dialogue? And so what this module, what that particular visualization does is actually introduce you to a slightly different quality of thought. It's got a slightly different accent, slightly different quality. And once you tune into it, you become incredibly lucky. Now, again, it could just be a figment of imagination, and only the results can prove that if there's anything in it. Now, but the real theory behind it all, and if you like the science, is that it's thought now that there are higher dimensions than our three dimensions, and in those higher dimensions, all thought, all knowledge, all wisdom are wrapped up in them. And if you get into the right state, we can tune into them. And that's how people like Leonardo da Vinci kind of started drawing helicopters and parachutes and all sorts of things 400 or 500 years ago.
Yeah, absolutely incredible. Now, you were talking about the product of the Bending Time program. Now, I know that's 15 MP3 recordings and 3.5 hours of learning.
Exactly.
And also, I've experienced it, so I know it takes you to heightened states of consciousness and has a really easy to follow flow. If you like. So I believe, now correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe if you've never done anything like this before, you still would be able to read the workbook and follow along and have absolutely no problems with that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's very similar to follow. There's no gobbledygook in there. There's no, apart from some of the things in Module 4, there's no weirdness either. And the weirdness only in Module 4 is that let's just assume that it might just be imagination, but it's got a real-world outcome. And you know what? It's nice to push the envelope and actually test things and try things and imagine. And if you think about it, what we do as humans is we're great imagineers, aren't we? So we wouldn't have gone to the moon if it wasn't for all those science fiction writers that imagine what it might be like to go there. And in the same way, what we're doing is imagining that time might not be as fixed as we think it is, and what happens as a result when we do that. And that shows you the power of our imagination, because we have that ability to actually manifest the world that we would like to envisage.
Exactly. So kind of it's like the modern day is the world may not be flat. Just because people have thought it before doesn't mean that it's necessarily true, does it?
Well, we know it's not flat, because we know, and the scientists have worked out the mathematics for this, that there are more dimensions than the ones that we can see. So in the same way that the people who thought it was flat then found it was a sphere, science now knows that we have at least 9 or 10 dimensions, if not more than that. And all these things we experience, like telepathy and psychic phenomenon, these other dimensions could give these things, which have maybe been seen as from a quackery point of view, they could actually give them a bit of a scientific basis. And I think it's great to research these things. There's a great scientist, a guy called Rupert Sheldrake, has written this book called The Science Delusion. And that book really questions a lot of modern-day science tenets, to to say, well, isn't science all about discovery research and experimentation? And, you know, they say that as soon as you think you know what it is, it isn't, don't they?
That's right. Well, that's the understanding of quantum physics, really, isn't it? You know, you
exactly.
change it by observing it. And, and it's fantastic to think that, all of this can be exactly how you want it to be. And that's what this Bending Time program's about, isn't it? It's you being able to get in the zone, do more with less time, so have more time for yourself and basically have a better productivity and creativity and time for yourself at the end of it.
For sure, yes. As far as I'm concerned, this is a real world application of this slightly cutting edge science. It's for anybody to use in any calling to get more done in less time. And so many people say, no, this is just, I haven't got enough hours in the day. This is a way to create subjectively more time.
Fabulous. Now, if anybody wants to find out more about this, it's £99, isn't it, Tom, for the 15 MP3s, the workbooks, and 3.5 hours of learning. And let's face it, you can keep learning, keep listening, and as your life and your your concentration on what you're doing changes, then you just go back and keep repeating the process, can't you?
For sure, yeah. Now, we want to hear from people. We want people to give us some feedback, let us know what works, what doesn't work, what they like more of, what they like less of. And I'm already getting ideas for Bending Time Part 2.
Excellent. And it's a win-win because if for any reason it's not for them, they get their money back.
For sure.
So where do they go? They go to www.bendingtime.info to find out all about that.
That's right, for sure, yeah.
Alternatively, they can come to the Recipes for Fresh Thinking site and ask a question or...
Yeah, I think there's links on there on the Recipes for Fresh Thinking site as well, yeah.
Brilliant. So your last and final comment, Tom, why is Bending Time such a great idea?
Well, you know what? Time is precious. What we think every second is precious, then if you're going to have a thought, why not make it a good one?
Yeah, totally get that. Well, thanks, Tom. Thanks ever so much for giving your time now. And thanks ever so much for giving us more time to do the things that we want to do and have more fun.
Thank you so much, Lauren. It's been great to talk to you.